And welcome to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Sam's off this week, getting the wonderful rest that he deserves because he's been doing some awesome community work this week, teaching at Science and Math Institute of Tacoma, teaching all the radio awesomeness and podcasting awesomeness. But you got me, Becky Friedman, this week, and with me is Luke. How you doing?
Doing good.
And Josh?
I'm doing pretty good.
Always great to have you guys both in the studio. Josh, you've been listening to some fun music lately, right? You've been on your little Weezer kick, right?
Oh, just Weezer did some covers, and you know, I mean, I'm a sucker for anybody that does Tears for Fears covers.
Okay, I'm looking at Weezer and I'm thinking, have you just gone full on karaoke here?
No, it's straight up karaoke. I mean, they're not even they didn't even change the sound for most of the songs for this. Like some people will play around with Mudvayne has a version of the Police King of Pain, which is heavy metal version of it, and it's great. But Weezer, it's formulaic almost. It's like, they just did the same thing. But then again, they had the Weird Al Yankovic cover of Africa. It's right. Pretty good. Sounds very similar.
That one came out just, a few months ago, didn't it?
Yeah. And then, of course, you have No Scrubs. That's probably where they did change up the formula a little bit, because, I mean, that's genre bending right there. And so that was pretty good.
I think, you know, smashing gender roles and, you know, expectations of who would be singing that, you know.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
You know, things like that. I mean, because I'm hearing, you know, No Scrub, and I'm thinking all the way back to, you know, maybe like junior year of high school, little girls' night out, saying, ew, no icky boys, only nice ones that treat us nice.
Yeah, they didn't even change up the lyrics at all. So it's like literally talking about no boy. It's literally still, so it's almost, it changes the perspective from one side, but still keeps the, you don't want scrub men.
So maybe maybe not super original, maybe formulaic, but we as atheists, I came across something that is certainly original, certainly non-formulaic, and that's not from Weezer at all, but from a very talented musician, Carlos Santana, who he's claiming some very non-traditional things here. Guitar legend Carlos Santana has revealed that he believes he was the lover of Mona Lisa in a past life. And that his current wife is the reincarnation of the woman made famous in Leonardo da Vinci's painting. He believes that the painting spoke to him during a visit to the Louvre Museum in Paris, saying, "Do you remember me when we were lovers in another time?" When asked by an Univision interviewer what he thought his fans might think, Santana responded that he was put on this earth to serve God, not maricos, using an offensive word that can be used as a gay slur or to mean wimps. He also recounted that the Virgin of Guadalupe told him that he was very proud of him, that she was very proud of him. Santana is preparing to release an EP titled In Search of Mona Lisa for the 20th anniversary of his album Supernatural and to embark on a 2019 tour commemorating the 50th anniversary of Woodstock.
Oh, wow.
This is just him trying to be relevant.
Really?
Yeah.
Be a little bit of both.
You don't think that he someone who's like super creative and a talented musician also has these funny beliefs?
He has them, but he's just also just smartly using it as a way to keep him, like, it makes him interesting.
I know a lot of musicians, and generally they're odd people, so this wouldn't surprise me at all, but the fact that he's releasing an album entitled something along the lines of Mona Lisa, that really plays into the whole thing there.
Now, is this different from, you know, Kesha saying that I had, you know, coital relations with a ghost?
Oh, wait, Kesha did
this? Yeah.
Oh.
Great. I mean,
there's more than one Supernatural that's, you know, happened to there. You got Carlos Santana Supernatural, you had Kesha Supernatural.
Not a pirate this time, though.
No, the ghost pirate lady, the lady that married a ghost pirate was not a musician. She was just some mom in Ireland. Yeah. but do you think that there's something about believing that you have contact with the spiritual world or the supernatural realms that inspires music? I mean, Luke, you enjoy the, you know, local music scene.
Yeah.
Right.
It makes you feel good. It gives you you know, a connection to the people around you, and some people might take that a little bit further.
Usually it's just shrooms.
Just what?
It's just shrooms.
Okay.
A lot of times.
All right.
LSD and shrooms. Yeah,
the
just mind-expanding narcotics and psychedelics.
Why do you need anything to expand your mind when you have the brilliant musicianship of these individuals that also believe that they had marital relations with a lady from a painting?
I think it just helps people get out of their heads, because the creative process can be damaging. I mean, like, so you got to kind of get out of your own headspace in order to be more creative. And unfortunately, that means for a lot of our artists, they go to substance abuse.
Okay. Do you think that in this case with Carlos Santana, I mean, yeah, he might be linking something to try and drum up support for his new EP and his tour and everything, but do you think that, you know, going to this belief in the supernatural, or just trusting that what your experience is definitely real, do you think that that's sort of an outcropping of this expansion of the creative process?
It could be both.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, it could be just a combination of all the factors, but again, I think it just, he's willing to say it because it's an interesting story and it gives him something to talk about.
He's trying to drum up support for a new album, I think. That's probably a big one, but I don't know him personally, so I don't know what his beliefs are.
The name of the EP is In Search of Mona Lisa.
Right.
He found her.
Yeah, wife, right?
Found her time and time again, apparently. So, I mean, how's he searching for Mona Lisa?
I guess we'll have to listen to the
shenanigans.
I gotta say that, you know, there would be one part of me that said, hey, you know what, dude, if that's your creative process, like, all right, fine, you know, you're not harming anyone, you think that you're getting super, you know, fun and interesting and creative, either, you know, personally or musically or sexually with something, right, that helps bring joy to yourself and to your fans that listen to you. But the part that really crosses over into, you know, I don't care if he believes that, you know, he speaks to, you know, religious figures that are long dead or subjects of paintings. The part that gets to me is when he says, you know, hey, well, what do you think your fans will think? And he says, well, I was put here to serve God.
And
I don't even care if you say, you know what, my service to whatever is divine or, you know, a deity is done through my musicianship. Like, a lot of musicians do that. And I, as an atheist, I don't, if you want to serve your understanding of what the divine is through making awesome music, like, that's cool. It's way better than serving your God by blowing up things or by forcing people into, you know, kidnap situations and coercion and things like that. Like, okay, I dig it. That's fine. But as soon as you say, I'm put here to serve God and not the term that he uses that can be used as a gay slur.
That's what I was going to point out there just a second ago.
Like, what do you think? Are you equating that your fans, that you don't have an obligation to your fans or any relationship to your fans? All of your musicianship has just been about service to God at this point?
Talking about the albums or the producers themselves too, the people trying to make money off of him.
I think, you know, as a musician, you could have a legit beef with the people that are, you know, perhaps taking advantage of you, but to throw folks under the bus with something that's usually associated with, you know, as a gay slur, not cool, Carlos. Definitely not cool. I want to move over a little bit in our states to Mississippi, because it relates somewhat to this, to someone who is also a talented musician that is sadly no longer going to be as recognized and honored in the state of Mississippi, because starting now, drivers in Mississippi who renew their car license fees will receive a new standardized plate, which replaces the current plate that features blues artist B.B. King's guitar. New plates will prominently display the phrase "In God We Trust," which were added to the state seal at the urging of Republican Governor Phil Bryant. Bryant's push reflected his assertion that it was time for Mississippians to stand for their beliefs, faith, families, and nation, and considered the adoption of In God We Trust to be a bold step for God and country.
Not so bold. Now, is this is this an acknowledgement that B.B. King might be promoted to God status?
Or at least his guitar.
His guitar. So now we're going into believing in idols.
Well, but Mississippi is number 46 as far as education goes. So
they're pretty high up there.
No,
I mean, come on,
number 46 as in
out of 51.
They're not 51. So they're good to go. They're not last.
They're not last. They're almost last.
They're not last. So I mean,
Josh, if B.B. King had been promoted to God status, he is being knocked down a few pegs by Governor Bryant, because in place of B.B. King, we should put something that says, In God We Trust. Clearly, We can't have something in B.B. King we are inspired. We have to replace it in order to be good, patriotic people that have families. We have to replace it with our trust, with a declaration of trust in God.
Yeah.
This is the thing that can really get under an atheist craw, right? And not even atheists, but religious individuals who are sick and tired of these elected officials saying, "In God we trust" is merely ceremonial, except for our Christian God, the Heavenly Father. And when you say, you know what, something as simple as a license plate, I don't know, when I was a kid, they were kind of boring. Did you guys get that sense?
Yeah, like, they were nice then.
Yeah, they're, well, I mean, I think that they're
quaint.
They're nice now because we got all different kinds of options. Have you guys ever had a vanity plate or a specialty plate?
No. Heck no, I'm not going to spend money for that.
Okay. I mean, I like in Washington State, you can, you know, have for endangered wildlife, you got a beautiful orca on there, and a portion of the fees associated with that license plate can go towards, you know, like, you know, wildlife preservation.
I'd rather send the entire amount of money to that preservation.
That'd be nice. I've been thinking about getting a UW plate just because I went there.
Okay, so you can, you know, show your pride in places that, you know, you were associated with. There's ones all across the country, you know, specialty plates for not just, you know, military. Now, as a military veteran, Josh, do you object to the specialty plates that show when someone has Purple Heart?
Or oh, no, I absolutely don't object to that. I just won't do it. I mean, why pay an extra tax that I don't have to pay? I mean, I'm for paying taxes, but not superfluously.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I think that there's a point to which, like, it's cool to have different license plates, right? I mean, they were pretty boring when I was a kid, as far as I remember.
Right.
It was always fun if you're going on road trips to look out the window and say, you know, oh, did we find, oh, I found another one from another state. Ooh, Pennsylvania. And whenever you found the Hawaii license plate, like, that was super awesome because, oh, Hawaii license plate on the mainland.
That's a long drive.
But what Mississippi's doing is, in an effort to apparently make it easier to catch people who are not renewing their car tabs, every few years, they say, we're not just going to give you a different colored sticker on your license plate. We're going to give you a full new license plate so that it's easy for us to tell if you got one of the old ones that you're not keeping up to date with your car tabs. We can cite you and then we can trap you in an economic cycle of not being able to get out of poverty.
Wait, this is forcing people to get new license plates?
Yes, that's what it is. It's not just a specialty plate. It's saying longer, when your car comes up for renewal, when your car tabs come up for renewal, no longer will you be able to keep that awesome B.B. King guitar plate.
Yeah.
You now have to say, "In God we trust," because apparently what we need is to have bold steps for God and country. How do these elected officials get away with saying this, and yet the Supreme Court still says, oh no, In God We Trust is completely legit, and One Nation Under God is completely fine, because it's merely ceremonially deistic, as opposed to Christian dominionism.
Is it wrong to spray paint the In God We Trust part?
I think that you cannot obscure parts of your license plate unnecessarily. I mean, there's certain regulations in every state about what kind of license plate frame you can have. I don't even have a frame on mine. Mine's attached with zip ties.
So this is
bumped into one too many things.
This is an absolute violation of the First Amendment. I mean, come on. You're saying I have to have this slogan on my car and there's nothing I could do about it.
Well,
that is,
it would say that it's,
sorry, that's massively wrong.
I would agree. I think it could be argued, and people have argued, that no one's forcing you to engage in driving a car.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Welcome to the 21st century. I mean,
welcome to capitalism that all but requires that you have
a car.
The United States is a massive country that almost everybody has to travel over 20 miles to get to work. I mean, we're not in a society where people work close to home. Having a car is mandatory.
Well, I got a 9.6 mile commute, so I guess I'm under average then.
Well, you can walk that in like what, two, three hours? I mean,
yeah, I'm not doing that in the middle of winter to report to work by 6:40 a.m.
Right. I mean, sure, you can bike it too, but I mean,
yeah, in the rain.
Yeah, in the rain.
It's you know, not safe.
That's an absolute violation.
I think besides it being a violation, this is really within the trend of these elected officials being emboldened by the Supreme Court rulings that have said that One Nation Under God or In God We Trust are completely fine. Invocations at the beginning of municipal meetings are completely fine. Someone going to a prayer breakfast is completely fine. I think that what this represents is people being emboldened by those declarations to say, oh, they said it's fine. Now I'm going to warp it and make it my own religious, most cases Christian, declaration for people that may not abide by my faith, participate in my faith, or people that don't want to declare their faith through something as simple as driving their cars.
Who could have seen this coming? Seriously.
You're listening to Ask an Atheist. If you've got an opinion on In God We Trust or Under God, go ahead and email us at questions@atheist.radio or tweet us at AskAnAtheistWA. We'll be back after the break.
This episode was sponsored by Cephalopod.
Hey, my little fishies. It's Jusubu89. Today I'm here with Donut Reviews, and we're going to be reviewing squid ink patches. They're said to cure common colds.
I hear they can even cure squiditis.
No way.
Yeah.
Okay, let's do this. So you grab the patches. Oh, well, they're kind of slimy.
Yeah, that's kind of weird, but cool at the same time.
And then you stick them on right about here.
Right here?
Yeah.
Okay, on the count of three.
One, two, three. Do not use squid ink products. Despite their seemingly magical benefits, those claims are flimsy. They conduct their business in a shady manner, and we believe that Cephalopod is dealing on the black market. You may even turn into a tentacle monster. Beware.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist. You know, we've spent about 6 months really having fun with a lot of these squid ink announcements and squid ink warnings. And it was revealed about, 3 weeks ago, I think now, that those, of course, are produced by the campers at Camp Quest Northwest. And we've got two sessions this year. A lot of us at Ask an Atheist are involved either as counselors or leadership or donors or parents sending their kid for the first time. Right, Luke?
That's me.
Yeah. So we can joke about things like squid ink products that were really just a stand-in for snake oil products, and we as atheists oftentimes get to our atheism through a healthy dose of skepticism. But one thing, though, that people seem to be associating as mere squid ink or conspiracy cures or snake oil is vaccines. And we've talked about it in the past that we as atheists often are skeptics as well. Luke, you're heavily involved with Kitsap County Skeptics, right?
That's correct.
Is that something that comes up pretty often?
We, generally speaking, have a pretty good consensus in the group on this, but it does pop its head every now and then. Somebody comes into the group thinking we're skeptical about whether or not they're actually okay, and they get in an argument with us on that, and then they leave and never come back.
So in the skeptic's sense, what is the skeptical view that you bring to the issue of immunizations? Like, what's are you saying, I'm skeptical that this is all government's conspiracy?
They are definitely almost entirely safe.
So from that perspective, a skeptic says, we're going to use our critical analytical faculties to look at the vast body of knowledge and the historical record of how we've prevented these communicable illnesses to really conclude that these are safe, that these are beneficial to society and to individuals. Am I on the right track here?
Absolutely.
Okay, because you know what? I think we need a little bit more skeptics of this flavor throughout Washington State, because Washington State Governor Jay Inslee has declared an emergency after 32 cases of measles have been confirmed. The outbreak started in Vancouver, prompting health officials in Clark County to declare a local emergency last week. Most of the confirmed cases have affected children who never received proper vaccinations to prevent the highly contagious illness, whose complications can include pneumonia, eye and ear infections, brain swelling, and serious pregnancy complications. Thousands may have been exposed as affected individuals visited public sites like the Portland IKEA, grocery stores in Clark County, Vancouver area churches and schools, Portland International Airport, and sporting events at the Moda Center and Kent Lake High School in King County, Washington.
Yeah, that sporting event, I believe it was a Trailblazers game, and something like 20,000 people could have been exposed there.
And that exposure isn't so frightening as long as you have proper immunity to it,
right.
Where for most of us, that's gotten through vaccinations, through the MMR, through measles, mumps, rubella vaccinations that we get as a series, you know, in childhood. I mean, those born before 1957, I believe, mostly are considered immune because you probably had it as a child.
Right. My parents both got it, I believe. I was immunized and never had to experience it myself.
So we've got some recommendations from the health department, and we'll also post these at atheist.radio with links so that you can look at those. Those that have been exposed to measles should stay home if they feel ill and contact health providers, the local health department, or the family health hotline. That number is 1-800-322-2588. And really urging anyone who hasn't been properly vaccinated, if you've been born after, you know, 1957, to definitely get the vaccine to protect yourself from this, because, you know, you could say it's kind of like, yeah, it's just a little illness. You're out for a week. You get over it. Just the number of economic impacts to someone being out for a week of work, having to care for your child, the health impact. It's not an easy thing to be down with a cough and a fever for a week when you're a tiny little body, right? When you're a child. And the impact to, you know, later, you can get that brain swelling, that encephalitis, apparently months after having like recovered from the original rash and fever and cough and things like that. That's scary. And to say, I don't want my kid poked in the arm because of that is kind of a thing that I don't really like. I can't get in that headspace. But Luke, you're a parent, right?
Right.
You have two kiddos.
I do.
And some step kiddos as well. Right.
Yes.
And, you know, what goes through your mind when you have to bring your children for vaccinations? Like, is that a hard thing or like
not
is that
even
a-
for me? It's not even scary at all. They're just going to get a little shot in the arm. I'll watch them for adverse effects. Hasn't happened yet. And now I don't have to worry about them getting whooping cough or measles, which is such a big thing these days again, which it shouldn't be. And now I'm not worried.
Okay.
They're safe from that now.
And now you mentioned whooping cough, right?
Yes.
You actually have some personal experience with that one.
I do. So when right before my oldest son was 6 months old, he contracted whooping cough. And that was one of the most terrifying experiences I've ever had as a parent.
Wait, but that's totally preventable with the tetanus and pertussis vaccine, right?
Yeah. He was too young to get that vaccine because you need a fairly robust immune system to be able to deal with it at that time. And he contracted it from a public space. Now, had somebody been properly vaccinated in that public space in the first place, my son never would have been exposed and never would have gotten it before he was able to be vaccinated. But somebody didn't, brought it around in the public space. It's a fairly innocuous cough for an adult. I mean, I've heard it feels kind of like a long-lasting cold or something like that. But for a child, it can kill them or cause permanent brain damage.
So
it's terrifying.
And that's those tiny little bronchioles when they get,
right.
You know, gummed up with all of the mucus and everything, it becomes really hard to breathe.
Right. When they start turning purple because they can't breathe because they're coughing so much, it's really scary.
So for you, the motivation to prevent that kind of experience again was enough to get over any fear of a little shot in the arm.
No, the shot in the arm is not an issue. Like I said, there could potentially be adverse side effects, but they're so uncommon that you don't really need to worry about them. Just be aware that they could happen. The likelihood is almost infinitesimal. It's not happening.
So the cool thing about, cool, if I can say that, about the widespread use of vaccines is that for the people that do have a medical reason to not receive a particular vaccination, like maybe it's only cultured in an egg medium and you're allergic to eggs, so you can't have this. The fact that everyone else does have that vaccine is a thing that protects that individual.
Right. And then you have cancer patients, people with suppressed immune systems. They are more susceptible to those diseases, too, just because their immune systems aren't working properly. And we know a few people over in Kitsap County that have children who have had like brain cancer or something, and their immune systems are suppressed by the chemotherapy. So when they are in a public space and they can be exposed to measles, that could kill them.
You know, this brings us to really a very startling thing about Washington State. And that's that we've got these pockets where in Washington state where you have vastly under immunized individuals. So Clark County's vaccination rate for measles is 84.5%. And while King County's rate is higher at 91%, those figures obscure concentrated pockets of low vaccination rates within specific neighborhoods, religious communities, and schools. Three Seattle schools, the Cascade Parent Partnership Program, Seattle Amistad, and Seattle Waldorf, have vaccination rates of 52% or less, and Bell Elementary in Kirkland sits right at 50%. And while these figures are far better than even a homeschooling academy in Vancouver that boasts really only a 26% full immunization rate, it's still far below the 90 to 95% that epidemiologists consider necessary for herd immunity against the measles virus. Most of those opting out of full vaccination in the affluent areas of King and San Juan counties claim a personal exemption. San Juan actually has a really, really low, has a really high opt-out for kids in schools. A lot of parents are opting not to vaccinate their kids fully or at all. So the reasons for those opt-outs in King County and in San Juan tend to be in more affluent areas for a personal philosophical exemption, while rural areas of Clark County more often claim a religious exemption. And something that's you know, kind of good to know and interesting is that the state currently requires a parent signature on an exemption certificate for those who opt out for religious reasons. It's only a parent signature. You say, I belong to a church. These are our teachings. We don't want to vaccinate our kids. But for a personal conviction, for a philosophical, you know, stink you raise, you got to also have a signature from a healthcare professional that states that the benefits of vaccines have been explained to you. Seems pretty weak if it enables these pockets of children, these whole communities of children that are, you know, with each other 5 days a week, you know, 180 days a year, that are playing with each other to be, you know, largely unvaccinated from these really highly contagious diseases.
It's scary. It really, really bothers me.
Yeah. And kids are germ factories.
Oh, yeah.
So they're the population that's most susceptible for many reasons. I mean, they're going to be the one that's probably the least immunized just because of age and other circumstances. But also the fact that they haven't completely learned how to be clean and everything that they
do. There was up until about a year ago, there was a thin layer of sticky film all the way up to finger height in my house. Jackson started washing his hands properly finally, but I'm still scrubbing that off the walls.
Wow.
I joke, you know, I mean, during the school year, I'm a high school teacher, and even at high school, you know, we joke that I work in a petri dish, you know.
Oh yeah, no, you school teachers and people that work at hospitals are like very susceptible to get sick all the time.
You know, one of the interesting conundrums, I've attended schools in as a child in other states outside of Washington, and I've taught school in three states, you know, one of which was Washington. And I was really surprised coming to Washington how we can let kids start the school year without being fully immunized. And what I came to understand is that there's actually some conflicting motivations based on what the laws are. And I would really love to see that kind of thing change, is that, you know, you can't let kids go to school if they don't have their immunization records turned in and complete, either with verification that they've been vaccinated, or verification that they have filed an exemption, or verification that they are exempted from the, you know, certain vaccinations because of a medical issue. You can't let them go to school, you know, start the school year in September after a certain, like, I don't know, 3 or 5 days of school, something like that. But here's the thing. The way that our school funding is determined is the number of students who show up by October 1st. And if you have an undercount by October 1st, that determines what kind of funding will allow, you know, how many full-time teachers and staff members are going to be allotted to you. So there's a real motivation here to say, you know what, I know you're not fully vaccinated, but we need your body in the chair in order to count you so that we can still get enough funding to have enough teachers to teach you all. Because eventually you are going to have those shots or the filed paperwork, and you're going to be in the classroom. And if you weren't able to be in the classroom for September and we undercounted how many students we have, and now come October, we have, you know, 28 more students for fourth grade, those 28 more students don't get an extra teacher.
So there's a financial incentive to not really care.
Yes. There's a financial incentive for a school to undermine public safety and public health. Right. It puts school nurses in a terrible position because they could risk losing, you know, their license based on not following professional standards and practices by undercounting or by overcounting, you know, or by letting in these kids under the radar. And I think that that's something that really is in conflict. I think that there's well-meaning people behind both things. I think that, you know, ensuring that at the beginning of the school year, all the kids are up to date with their immunizations, that's important. I think it's also important to be fiscally responsible with how we use our funding in schools and making sure that, you know, if there's a school that has 28 fewer fourth graders, that you don't have a whole nother teacher for that grade level. Because that money is probably needed where those 28 fourth graders are, right? But I think that those are examples of two things in conflict that have good impetus behind both of them, but is a breakdown in communication and the pragmatic reality of what goes on.
I was totally unaware of that.
But speaking of laws, you know, we're in legislative session right now.
Right.
Have you guys been following any of the things that are happening in Olympia? I mean, I know that the federal government only recently decided to not be shut down.
Yeah, that's been occupying most of my time lately.
Yeah, I don't ever pay attention to local politics, to my everlasting shame.
Oh, I'm gonna give you some everlasting shame on that one, because we know that, you know, I mean, it's not just a trite little statement that all politics is local. Politics where you can actually most directly affect change often comes at the local level.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you have things like, hey, someone wants to make all school children say the Pledge of Allegiance and the Ten Commandments every day, because that's happening in some state, not Washington, luckily. But when you see that happening, you can say, excuse me, not cool.
No.
Also doesn't represent the non-Judeo-Christian, non-Bible-believing individuals. And even though it may apply to Bible-believing individuals, school shouldn't be a place that you say that, right?
And force other people to do it.
So in Washington state, we actually have a lot of stuff that's being, you know, if you go to the Washington legislative site, there's bill after bill after bill. Some of them are pre-filed. Some of them are just coming up now. But I want to bring attention a little bit to some of the vaccine and immunization related bills. So there's really a flurry of bills related to vaccine and immunization requirements. A group of mostly Republican lawmakers, including Spokane's Matt Shea, have bills in both chambers to require a $1 per shot tax from every healthcare provider who administers immunizations in order to fund a vaccine adverse reaction monitoring system at the state level, duplicating a program already in existence at the federal level. Shea is also sponsoring a bill that declares all forms of mercury to be neurotoxic, nephrotoxic, and immunotoxic, and repeating many refrains found in groups and publications that decry the use of vaccines, contrary to a robust body of research that finds vaccines to be safe, effective, and beneficial for public and individual health.
Matt Shea.
I'm going to let you take
Sounds
this one, Josh.
Familiar. Who's this Matt Shea guy? Is there his name keeps coming up for some reason.
Oh, yeah. Some reason. It's from your area of the state.
Oh, he's from Spokane? Oh,
this
no.
This
Biblical War.
That guy.
Yeah. He's the one that has been a featured speaker at white separatist, you know, gatherings. He released the Biblical Basis for War 3-page manifesto.
How is this guy still in office? I
think he's been stripped of a lot of his committee. And
yeah, he's off a lot of committees, and he's no longer the chair of the Republicans, as far as I know, in this state.
Yeah, he lost his party chairmanship.
Yep.
Is he trying to use vaccines as a means to deliver his kill everybody legislation that he wants to do?
That's what I'm kind of like. Is he a biblical conspiracy theorist and a vaccine conspiracy theorist, or is he jumping on the vaccine conspiracy train in order to try and very slowly have some weird Plan 9 from outer space to lessen the robust ability of Washingtonians to speak out against his absurd perspectives because they're all too sick with measles to do so?
trying to pick up more constituents and, you know, replace federal programs with state programs because the Fed can't be trusted, I guess.
Oh, yeah. State rights, when I say state rights matter.
Right.
Yeah. You know, Luke, you went through this bill, right? And you looked at some of the language of it. And you being someone who's fairly scientifically literate, right?
Right.
What kind of stuff did you find?
Well, I mean, it really brings up the whole Wakefield idea. Andrew Wakefield, the guy that demonized the MMR vaccine because of a variety of things, including thimerosal or what, ethyl mercury. So it wants to classify both methyl mercury, which is a horribly toxic substance, with ethyl mercury, which is eliminated from the body rapidly, as the same thing, basically.
Okay. So just to give a little bit more background, Andrew Wakefield, completely debunked, lost all his medical licenses, but is the darling of folks that are convinced that the medical establishment is out to, you know, poison your kids, right?
Right.
Really, really troubling. And so many agencies, so many governments, so many healthcare providers, so many communities are still battling this misinformation that this guy was peddling, because he had his own, you know, treatments, his own PAT treatments for kids with something that he found to be very troubling, and that's autism, right? And, you know, I think that I don't know how long the effects of this misinformation that he popularized are still going to be terrorizing us as communities in terms of health. But to see someone like Matt Shea leaping onto this and couching it as actually an environmental and public health thing, you know, it's like trying to say like, oh, mercury shouldn't be in the environment. Granted, that's why we have programs to prevent mercury from like getting into our groundwater.
You mean had.
Oh, right. Well, yeah.
The EPA is doing away with a lot of mercury legislation.
Isn't he normally not down with environmental protections?
Well, if you can, here's the thing, if you can, you know, embrace people that would be supportive of an environmental protection bill, and you can sort of take them under your wing and bring them into your fold, you might have success convincing them that something excellent, like protecting our environment and our bodies from, you know, actual, you know, harm-causing agents, you might be able to convince them that vaccines are among those same kinds of things. When in reality, like, we have that robust body of knowledge that says that. But one of the troubling things is, you know, you guys have seen the studies that if someone is really entrenched in a position that they feel viscerally and emotionally, presenting them with more information and more facts doesn't actually change their mind, does it?
Unfortunately.
No, it does not. You have to actually address their fifis.
So you say fifis in sort of a little, you know, like a condescending way, but I want to dig
ironically
in.
condescending, yes.
I want to dig into that a little bit because, all right, Josh, you and I aren't parents, right? I mean, we love kids, we care for kids, we both worked with kids in, you know, various different circumstances, but you know, we're not kids. I cannot speak to.
Speak for yourself. I am a kid.
Oh, okay.
I am absolutely a kid. Just ask my wife.
All right. We'll maybe have that for a different episode, perhaps. But Luke, you are a parent.
Yes.
I can only imagine the level of like terror that it must be that you must have to be in charge of protecting the safety of another human being.
It's terrifying. My 19-year-old just moved out, and I'm still worried about him. And he's an adult taking care of himself.
Have you ever found that you're sort of motivated more or swayed more by emotional arguments when it comes to the health and safety of your kids?
I think everyone is. I try not to be, but I'm an emotional human being.
Emotions kick in first.
Yeah.
So when we're looking at the safety of children, and when we're looking at someone that says, I want to protect my child, I have to honor that perhaps the reason you don't want to vaccinate your child is because you are trying to be the best parent that you can. You're trying to prevent harm from coming to your kid. The fact that someone has told you that a vaccine will bring harm to your kid is abominable in my mind.
It's terrifying.
And I hate that that's the, case that we're facing. And I hate the fact that you got guys like Matt Shea that are trying to perpetuate this. I hate the fact that we've got pockets of our state and pockets of the internet that are trying to perpetuate these kinds of things that keep parents in the grips of fear that something terrible will befall their child. You know what's a terrible thing to befall your child?
Measles.
You just described
whooping cough.
You're 6 month old turning purple because he can't breathe. I don't know something that would be more terrifying than seeing your child being cut off from air, from oxygen.
That's not good. It was not good.
And so I think that as we skeptics or atheists or science-minded individuals look at trying to combat this trend of people trying to, you know, reject modern medicine and reject things that are exceedingly beneficial for public health and individual health, I think that it behooves us to look at where is this parent trying to do good and say, here's where you can do even better to protect your child. Here's what it looks like when your child dies. Here's what it looks like when someone who is immunocompromised from HIV is hospitalized and loses their job because they can't. They're now permanently disabled. Here's what it looks like when a 52-year-old mom who teaches public school dies from the flu, which could have been prevented or lessened from getting a vaccine. Here's what it looks like when a child who's too young to get the vaccine isn't protected by the community immunity that those vaccines provide. I think we're going to talk a little bit more about this because there's a greater overarching thing besides parenting and besides Washington State that really is at play here. But you're listening to Ask an Atheist. You can leave us a voicemail anytime at 844-SKEPTIC. Regardless of whatever you're skeptical of, we'll be back after the break. Welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. We've been talking about the scary, scary prospect of diseases, of vaccine-preventable diseases, really having a resurgence, and most recently with measles case in Washington State and carried over into Portland now. So it's crossing two different states. And when we look at why is this important? Why is this important that, you know, that atheists care about this or that anyone really care about that? I want to bring us to a global perspective here, guys. The World Health Organization has named vaccine hesitancy among the top 10 threats to global health, along with air pollution, climate change, antimicrobial resistance, and high threat pathogens like dengue and Ebola. Vaccine hesitancy is characterized as a delay in acceptance or the outright refusal of vaccines despite availability and accessibility. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention notes that the percentage of children receiving no vaccination has actually quadrupled in the past 18 years, with regional pockets of unvaccinated individuals leading to a breakdown in what's known as community immunity or herd immunity. The U.S., Australia, and Italy lead in developed nations with high rates of vaccine hesitancy, with sharp rises in non-medical exemptions from vaccination requirements. To bring it a little bit closer, we talked last segment about some of the bills that are being floated in our own state legislature about things that capitalize on vaccine fears. But actually, one bipartisan bill, which is HB 1638, would actually eliminate a philosophical or personal exemption from being used to exempt a child from the MMR vaccine. That's the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, unless titer testing proves pre-existing immunity. So that's actually really cool.
That one's great. I like that one a lot.
Locally, we've got Lori Jenkins of Tacoma that's a sponsor. And in Vancouver, you've got a sponsor, Paul Harris. He's a Republican in, you know, Clark County, and that's one of the affected areas.
Wait, so it's got bipartisan support?
Yes. This would mean that, you know, if your religion, if your church says we don't vaccinate it, that's still there. But for the MMR, for measles, mumps, and rubella, you cannot say, my personal philosophy says I don't like my kids to get this. You have to get it. And it would take away that option of having a personal exemption for that vaccine. And I think that what that really means is that measles is being seen and it's right here in our community and it's a threat, and that these are preventable illnesses, especially when we look at, you know, what the World Health Organization said is, you know, antibiotic resistance and antimicrobial resistance. If we can prevent those microbes from taking hold in our human populations in the first place, then we don't have to worry so much about the waning efficacy of things like antibiotics.
Right.
Hey, so Becky, can't I just not take the MMR vaccine and be safe if I just clean the environment? Can't that help?
Clean the environment?
I think you'd have to remove people.
Yeah, wait.
I work in a petri dish. Remember?
Yes.
Right. I think what you're hinting at here is this overclean environments that have led to antimicrobial resistance and a reduction in like little kids being exposed to those pathogens and being able to build up those immunities. Is that kind of what you're referring to?
No, actually, I was referring to something you said before recording. Is that the measles virus itself is actually stays in the environment for 2 hours?
Oh yeah, that was shocking.
That
to
is
see.
Insane. Like, it is super. You don't know it's there.
Super contagious. It's on the par with like the norovirus. I think it's one of the most infective viruses out there.
So yeah, like for polio, for instance, the thing that you know racked fear in you know our country for decades, that kept kids away from public pools and things like that. I mean, that you only need actually an 85% vaccination rate in order to really keep at bay, because polio isn't even as infectious as measles. I was reading in the King County Health Department and the Mayo Clinic and the CDC say that you can have someone that's infected with measles, is coughing in a room, leaves that room, you enter it 2 hours later, that's an exposure that has an infectious vector. You can get it, even though someone left 2 hours ago.
This is why the Blazers game is such a big deal. If one person was there to expose 20,000 people to the measles, at least a few of them are going to be susceptible, because the vaccination only has like a 90-95% efficacy rate. And I just went to an all-day festival this weekend. Now I'm scared for myself, because how many people from Portland came up to scary.
So those are the kinds of things that a vaccine can really help protect, because in those cases where it isn't effective, the disease isn't there. It's not taking hold because, you know, everyone else is vaccinating against it. But you need up to 95%. That's huge.
Yeah.
Because the 5% remaining really needs to be for folks that cannot receive it, either because of age or because of their own medical, histories and things like that. And I think it's really scary. And it's not just an issue for Washington State. It's the thing that the World Health Organization is prioritizing, especially in places where people don't have accessibility. So you have vaccine hesitancy, where you say, hey, you know what, even though it's freely available or affordable, and even though it's effective, I'm going to hesitate to get it on a regular schedule, or I'm going to pick and choose, or I'm going to reject it altogether. That's worrisome, especially because there are places where it's not acceptable and not effective. And that brings us to Brazil.
Wow, Brazil's coming up a lot lately.
A Baptist missionary from Maine is facing a possible trial for genocide in light of accusations that he exposed an isolated indigenous community in Brazil to fatal diseases. Steve Campbell is alleged to have entered an area protected for the Himirima tribe while doing mission work with a nearby indigenous community more integrated with modern society. Brazil's Indigenous Affairs Department, FUNAI, stated that contact with the Himirima constituted a violation of their rights and a very high likelihood of disease transmission, even in the case of only indirect contact. Experts worry that future contact at the hand of missionaries is more probable now that Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro has appointed an evangelical preacher as the head of Indigenous Affairs.
Who better than that?
Didn't somebody just get arrowed to death doing this?
Yeah, so this really recalls the case of John Allen Chau, right? And he was a Washingtonian, and he was a missionary. And he went to the Andaman Islands out in the Indian Ocean trying to proselytize to a group of, isolated individuals. You know, not so much uncontacted tribes, but folks that have rejected contact, with a globalized society or the modern world, and also at this point cannot reliably and safely be brought into contact with modern societies because of those diseases. They just don't have the immunity right to those diseases.
Yeah, and if you think that the genocide charge is overreaching, you need to look into American history, not just North America, but the America's history about how we came, it was colonized and what made it possible for colonization to happen. I mean, 90% of fatalities were from diseases. I mean, by the time colonization actually took a foothold, native populations were wiped out by disease that we brought over, our ancestors brought over.
And certainly in battle, it's going to be easier to defeat your enemy if half of their structures, their hierarchies and their armies and their own governments are weakened because half their people have died, and the remaining ones are sick and ill or overworked trying to provide for the remaining populations.
And it was so effective that, like, there was military commanders that passed out smallpox lakes blankets to weaken the enemy.
But by then, they were almost all completely decimated anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, not that that's okay.
No, but it's just more insult to injury.
Right.
And I think what this really looks and speaks to for me, as someone who does not subscribe to supernatural powers and deities and isn't affiliated with religion, you've got multiple sides to this. You've got the disgrace of someone who is religious causing harm to people because of disease. And as someone who's a skeptic and science-minded, you've got the disgrace of people threatening public health because of their wacky non-science-based beliefs regarding disease, regarding transmission, regarding, pneumonia isn't a real big deal. Everyone should go through pneumonia. No, everyone didn't get through pneumonia.
Yeah, no.
Not everyone got through measles.
I mean, sure, if you're alive and you had pneumonia, you got through it. But, I mean, everybody knows somebody that's died from pneumonia.
Pneumonia is not fun.
Oh, I've
had it a couple of times. It's not fun.
I've had it once. It was awful. It was a very terrible experience that I never want to repeat.
Mm-mm.
There's some things that are really, as I keep using this word, disgrace, right? In terms of not abiding by what the natural world tells us and what the scientific method tells us, the disgrace of using your religion to actively harm people in a physical way, let alone the myriad episodes that we've done where we've talked about the mental and emotional harm that can be perpetrated upon individuals through a religious context. But sometimes there's things that aren't really disgraceful, but just a little bit puzzling, or perhaps maybe even a little bit funny. And for this, I'm going to bring us and anchor us down. Anchor us in the waters of Florida. So we love talking about Florida. And I got to give Florida a little bit of a break because two of our guests that are, your co-hosts that are usually on in Florida, they're not on tonight. You guys, Luke, you never lived in Florida, right?
I was born in Seattle.
Okay. And Josh, you've steered clear of Florida in all of your world travels?
No. I've been to Florida a few times, but I've never lived there.
And you've never become a Florida man.
Ah, the Florida man meme.
So, a man, who happens to be from Florida, a man in Palm Beach, Florida, drove his Ferrari last month into the ocean at the behest of Jesus, according to a report recently released by police in the southern Florida city. James Muchacho sped into the intercoastal waterway after local police officers advised him that he couldn't park his car on the docks. Upon rescue and subsequent arrest, Muchacho told police, "It was very hard to bear the responsibility of Jesus having made him the smartest man on earth, but he urged them to remember to smile because money was going to be irrelevant 2 days hence."
What day was this?
This was actually the day after Christmas. This is recently released stuff from last month.
Money doesn't matter. All right,
so
cool.
This was another end of the world thing that didn't happen. Is that what I'm getting?
I don't know. I think this is a post-Christmas, post-shopping. I'm going to be bankrupt in 2 days anyway.
Yeah, this it was a Ferrari. For his sake, money shouldn't. He hopes that money doesn't matter. I mean, a Ferrari. I mean, the insurance is going to be like, nope.
I hope it was insured properly. Jeez, you can insure that properly. But if it wasn't, that's if you borrowed that car from somebody.
Well, if Jesus made him the smartest man on earth, I'm sure that he would have been smart enough to have proper insurance on his luxury vehicle, right?
And to realize that it's not a submarine.
Yes, but if Jesus tells you that it's a submarine, I mean, hey, Jesus told you to sacrifice your firstborn son, but then provides a lamb in place. Maybe Jesus told him to drive his Ferrari into the water, and he just thought that God would provide a submarine for him at the same time.
So is he a religious James Bond?
Oh,
a religious James? What would that look like, even?
I mean, nobody knows if James Bond is religious or not. I mean, they never established that fact about his character. So, I mean, but it could be James Bond, or it could just be,
Well, James Bond certainly does not stick to the more conservative talking points regarding sexual mores.
Yeah.
I don't know. No reports about whether Mr. Muchacho, had any of that kind of involvement. But, you know, you go, you park your car on the dock, and then police says, dude, can't park your car here. We're going to issue a citation. I think he's in for a way bigger citation.
Yeah. We make light of it, but this sounds like it could possibly be mental illness or drug-induced.
I think either of those are likely in this case.
Both are probable.
And I think it brings up again the fact that sometimes when you have something like a mental illness or a drug-induced kind of psychosis or alternate perception of reality, the things that are in our general culture can inform what we see or what we think that are not in accordance with reality. So in Florida, if there's a lot of Jesus talk, you know, then maybe if you are feeling a little bit disconnected from reality, either because of a mental illness or a, intentional chemically induced state, you know, you're going to incorporate some of those things into what weird perceptions you're having.
Right. So if this was New Mexico, it'd probably be aliens.
Oh, good call. What would it be up here? Would it be Sasquatch? Made me?
Well, Sasquatch is everywhere. I don't understand this. Like, we do not have a monopoly on Sasquatch. I mean, every rural area has its own version of Sasquatch. And like one
but
of the
we
most.
We have the Sasquatch.
Oh, the Sasquatch. Okay. Yeah. So the daddy of all Sasquatches.
If any large crypto hominid has told you that he made you the smartest man in the world, or if you have decided to drive your car into a waterway at the behest of a deity or supernatural creature, you can contact us at atheist.radio. We'll also have the links to all the King County and Washington State Health Department things up there. Thank you so much, Luke and Josh.
You're welcome.
Not a problem.
Please stay safe, stay healthy, vaccinate. We'll see you next week.